All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Mem Ches. We are picking up Emirat Hashem at the Mishnah on Mem Zayin Amud Beis. So our shir, the day of learning, is dedicated by Gavi and Shana Cohn in commemoration of the Yartzeit of Gavi's grandfather, Meir Axman, Zichor Lebrach. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an Aliyah and the family a Nechama. And the shir is also dedicated today by Maish and Devorah Wertesheim for their son Avi to successfully complete his medical boards. Avi Shtav Hatzlacha, Bechol Maaseh Yadav. And I will say with that, let's begin. And a good Chodesh, of course. So with that, let's begin. Says the Mishnah, Eizu Bechor L'Nachala. What is the example of a Bechor who is a Bechor ultimately again for inheritance purposes? Ula Kohen, and ultimately again and for a Kohen. Remember again in the previous Mishnah, we were discussing examples of a Bechor who is a Bechor for Nachala, but not necessarily ultimately again for Kohen and not Nachala. Now the Shaila is, what is the example of a Bechor who is a Bechor both for Nachala inheritance purposes as well as for Pidyon purposes? So Hamapeles, Shafir Mali Mayim, Mali Dam, Mali Gninin. If a woman miscarries a placenta that is filled with water, filled with blood, or ultimately, again, filled with different colors. So halacha l'maaseh, that's not considered a birth. And the child who comes after that will be a bechor for all purposes. K'min dogim v'chagovim shkatzim v'ramosim. So if a woman miscarries something that looks like a fish, grasshoppers, shakats, creepy crawly things, ramosim, ma'pelesim arboim, or if a woman miscarries on the 40th day or before the 40th day, ultimately, again, habo achareim b'chor l'nachalo l'kohen. These births are not considered to be significant, and the child that comes after these births is considered to be a b'chor, both for inheritance as well as for pidyon haben purposes. Yotzei dofen v'habo acharav. Similarly, again, if a child is born cesarean section, and one who comes after it, so remember again, let's say there's a firstborn boy, but he's not born naturally, he's born cesarean section. He's born as a C-section. And then there's a brother who comes after him. So the halacha is, Shnehem Einan Bechor, Lo L'Nachal V'Lo V'Lo L'Kohen. Neither of them are considered to be a Bechor, whether for Nachal inheritance purposes or for Pidyon purposes. Reb Shimon says, Harishon L'Nachal V'Asheni L'Chamishon. Reb Shimon says, the first child, the C-section baby, is the Bechor ultimately for inheritance purposes, and the second one is the Bechor for Pidyon HaBen purposes. Because we'll say the first one will be considered to be Rashis Ono, the first of his seed, even though it's born cesarean section. And the second will be a Petarechem, because Halacha L'maaseh, that is the firstborn, natural firstborn child. So the Gemara this week's at this case. Rishon L'Nachalolo. So we'll say ultimately again, we're focusing now on the last case in the Mishnah. Excuse me. Right, last case in Mishnah, where the first son is born cesarean section, and the second son is born naturally. So the Tanakhama said neither of them are bechor. Rishon l'nachalolo. So the first one will not be a bechor for inheritance purposes. Why? V'yoldu lo ba'inon. Because they both say the Torah uses lashon of v'yoldu, and Rashi, the Gemara Dash is derech leida. In order for a child to be a bechor, has to be born in a natural way. L'chamish slaim namilo. Similarly, again, it will also not be a bechor for pinyon. Why? Petarechem ba'inon. Ultimately, again, because it has to be the first of the opening of the womb, and this child was born C-section. Sheni v'nachalolo. The second child will not be a bechor l'nachala for inheritance purposes. Why? Reishis ono ba'inon. Because the bechor for nachala has to be the first of the seed of the father. And this child is not the firstborn of the father. He won't be a bechor ultimately for pidyon purposes. Why? Because ultimately, again, he holds that being a bechor, Tanakama holds that a bechor ledavar echad. But remember again, what that means is, so look at Rashi, bechor ledavar echad, kigon zeshu, bechor lerachamim, ve'ein a bechor levlado. So we'll say, in generally, we say that a bechor has to be a two-pronged bechor. Number one, the opening of the womb. Number two, the firstborn of the children. In this case over here, although the second child who is born is a bechor for the rechem, he's the opening of the womb, he's not the first of the children born. And therefore the Tanakhama holds, bechor ledavar echad, to be a bechor in one way, is not, or I could say, to only satisfy one of the criteria of the bechor, ultimately again, does not give you bechor status. Reb Shimon on the other hand says, harisha lenachala, Reb Shimon says, the first bechor who was born is in fact the Bechor for inheritance purposes. Why? Vashini l'chamishlam, and the second one who was born is the Bechor for pinyon, because Rav Shimon l'tamei damar teleit l'rabos yotzei dofen. Because we'll say ultimately again, Rav Shimon holds that when it comes to nachla, the Torah used lashon of teleit. Teleit comes to include any type of birth, even a C-section. Therefore, the first child who was born, halach l'maisa, will be a Bechor for nachla purposes. Vashini l'chamishlam, and the second son who is born will be subject to pidyon aben. Why? Kasavar bechor ledavar echad havi bechor, because he will hold that a bechor, even who satisfies one of the criteria, is called the bechor. And the second son satisfies one of the criteria, namely that he's the petarechem, even though he's not the first of the children who was born, and therefore halacha lemaisa will be subject to pidyon. So we'll say halacha lemaisa, we paskin like the Tanakhama, and therefore in this case over here, where the firstborn son is a C-section and the secondborn is a natural birth, halacha lemaisa, neither of them are a bechor, neither for pidyon nor for nachala. We do not paskin like Rabbi Shimon. Good. Top of memchas. Mishalo bichra ishto. So we'll say now next case. Someone who's married and his wife had never gone ahead and given birth before. What happens? V'yolda shnei zecharim. Now, mazel tov, she gives birth to two boys. So now, the issue over here is we don't know which one of them is a bechor, but the good news in this case is what? One of them is a bechor. So there's a simple resolution. No sin hay slum the kohen. So we just go out and we give 5 slum to the kohen. Okay, so what's interesting about this case, by the way, is apparently you could redeem your firstborn son even if you're not exactly sure who is the firstborn. So halacha lemaaseh, because I know one of them is the firstborn, therefore I give 5 slum to the kohen and shalom Yisrael. Meis echa mehen besoch shloshim yom. So we'll say, what happens if one of the children dies, one of the sons dies within 30 days? So ha'av pater. In this case, the father will ultimately, again, be pater for pidyon aben. Why? Because we'll say, this will be a motzi mechaver alav araya. Right? The father could claim it's the son who was born first, who passed away. The kohen will say, no, it's the second son. And the father will say, okay, prove it. And the burden of proof is upon the kohen to show that the surviving son is the firstborn son, because the kohen is not going to be able to prove that. Therefore, the father is pater. So the Gemara goes like, Mesa ava banim kayamim. What happens if the father dies? If the father dies, but the sons are still both alive? So Rabbi Meir Amrimer says, Im nosnu ad shelo chilku. So listen to this. So here's the case. So again, in this case over here, the father dies and the sons are still alive. The father died. Obviously, we're going to discuss when the father died. But the point is, he died and the pidyon was not yet done. So Meisa Avabanaka, Ramir says, so what do we do? Depends. Im nasnu ad shelo chalku nasnu. So ultimately, again, I will say, if the father, or what it sounds like over here, although we'll define this in the Mishnah, the Gemara, excuse me, if the father had already paid, right, or if the 5 slum were already paid before the division of the estate, then ultimately, again, what is given is given. Ve'imlav, but if not, peturin. Ultimately, again, they will be pater. Again, we'll see what this means in the Gemara. Rabbi Huda says, nischaivu nechasim. Rabbi Huda says, no, the obligation upon pinyon devolves upon the estate. And once the estate is obligated, halacha lemaisa, the children must pay. Zachar unikeva. We will say, what happens if halacha lemaisa, in the case of the Mishnah, the father went ahead and had 2 children, but one of them was a boy, one of them was a girl, and we don't know which one was born first. In kan lekoin klum. The coin has no claim. Why? Because the father could say it was the girl who came out first. The kohen will say it's the boy who came out first. There's no way for the kohen to prove his claim. And therefore, motzi mechavero alav harai. So also remember again, the contrast between the bookend cases is in a case number 1 in the Mishnah, there were 2 boys who were born, which means there's definitely a bechor. In case number two, in the last case of the Mishnah, there's not a definitive Bechar. It's a boy and a girl, and it's possible that the girl was born first, and therefore, Halacha L'maisa, the Kohen has nothing to claim. Good. Says the Gemara. The Misa Av Emes. So we'll say now we're focusing on the case of the Mishnah where the father died. So remember again, the Mishnah said that the father died, right? Misa Av, and the sons are alive. So Mir says, if ultimately the pinyon was given before the estate was divided, then that which was given is given. And if not, ultimately, again, they will be pater. So we're trying to figure out, demis ha'av emas, when did the father die? Ilema demis la'achar la'miyom, if you want to say that the father died after 30 days, in other words, the child had turned 30 days old, and then the father died, to which the, so we'll say, so what does that mean? That means that the chiyav pinyon, right, the obligation ultimately again of redemption has already devolved upon the child. So Baha Amrab Meir, Ki Cholku Pturin. So what does that mean? Why would Rabbi Meir say if they already divided the estate, their pater, how could that be? Vaha Ishtabdon Luhu Linachasi. We'll say if the children were already 30 days old, that means the obligation devolves upon the father. If the obligation had devolved upon the father of Bepashtos, it devolves upon his assets. Even if he dies, there's an obligation of the estate to pay the money. What does it make a difference if the children divided the estate or not? But so the Gemara says, Ella, to mispesoch lamidyom. Rather, it must be what? That the father died within 30 days. He died within 30 days of the birth of the child. So maishna ki chalku. So let's analyze this. So Meir says like this. If the father died within 30 days, so we'll say, what's the halacha? It depends. If ultimately what? If they divided the estate, so Rabbi Meir says, they're pater. Right? If they didn't divide the estate, ultimately they're chayiv. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Maishna ki chalku. Why is there any distinction if they divided the estate or not? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Da'azul agabi hay umadchilei. Because what's going to happen? The Kohen's going to come to some son number one and say, pay me the money for your pinyon ben. And what is son number one going to say to him? I'm not the Bechar, go to my brother. He'll go to the second son. And the second son will say, we'll push him away saying, I'm not the Bechar, go to my brother. So we'll say, so therefore again, when they divide up the estate, each of the children could go ahead and push the Kohen to the other. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Kilo chalku nami leizel agabe hai v'litche. Leizel agabe hai litche. But say, why is that a function of the division of the estate? The two brothers could do that to the coin even if the estate is still undivided, right? He shows up by brother number one, says, pay me the 5 slime. Brother number one says, I'm not the Bechar, go to my brother. He goes to brother number two, pay me the 5 slime. Brother number two says, I'm not the Bechar, go to my brother. What does it matter if they divided up the estate or didn't divide up the estate? Either way, both brothers could deflect the claim of the Kohen. On Rabbi Yirmiyahu, Zosomeres, Rabbi Yirmiyahu says, we see something very important from here. Zosomeres, this teaches us, Shnei Yosef ben Shimon, Shahayu bi'ir achos. This teaches us something very important, that if you have two men by the name of Yosef ben Shimon who lived in the same city, v'lachu sadeh b'shotfus, and they bought a field in partnership, balchov gova osamehem, a creditor can collect the field from them. What does this mean? Take a look at Rashi in just a moment. Shnei Yosef ben Shimon, Shahaya ish echad motzial echanem shtarchov, v'chol echad mehen, haya madchehu leymar lo anihu kiim chaveri, v'lachu ben shnehem sada achos, torif balchov chatzi adamah. I'm supposed to listen to this. You know, in general, if you lend money to someone, you have to try to be as specific with their name as possible. Why? Let's say I lend money to Yosef ben Shimon. It happens to be in the city. There are two guys by the name of Yosef ben Shimon. So what happens? I show up to Yosef ben Shimon number one. What does he tell me? No, not me. Right? I show up to Yosef ben Shimon number two. He tells me, not me. So I say, so what's the halacha? So I say, here's the problem. I have no real mechanism of collection. With one exception. If they go ahead and they own a field jointly, I have the ability to seize that field. Why? Because I can say, listen, the man of shach, right? One of you owes me money. both of you own this field. So because both of you own this field, I'm seizing this field in satisfaction of my debt. So we'll say, so why is this important for us? Look, finish that, Rashi. Hachanami toref ha-koin he-slam he-nechasim she-nyachar va-amar lehu nami hachiyim akta ha-bachar mechelkecha ani notel v'machicha ha-bachar mechelko ani notel u-bein shnechem tis-pasharu. So we'll say, so what happens? Just like if I lent money to Yosef and Shimon, and they argue deflecting the claim upon one another, I could seize a field that belongs to both of them, seize the amount of my money, and say to them, hey guys, here's what I know. One of you owes me money. The two of you work it out as to who owes me the money, but I'm taking my money from this field. So too here, the Gemara suggests that when you have two boys who were born, and we're not sure who the firstborn is, if they did not yet divide up the estate, so therefore what they own a field jointly together, the kohen could come to the estate, seize five slaim worth of property, and tell the two boys what? You guys figure it out. Here's what I know. One of you owes me, quote unquote, five slaim. I'm going to take five slaim worth of property, and you guys duke it out as to who is actually the Bechar. Therefore, we'll say this is Rabbi Meir's distinction. That's Rabbi Meir says, if they did not yet divide up the estate, and therefore they own property jointly, the Kohen could come along, seize five slaim worth of property, and then leave it to them to work it out. If they divided up the estate already, then what's the problem? What's the problem? Each of the two boys could deflect the claim of the Kohen onto the other. So the Gemara says as follows. So the Gemara says, because mostly just like in the case of the two Yosef and Shimon, the Kohen takes a piece of jointly owned property and he says, if I lent you the money, then I'm collecting from your estate. And if I took from your friends, then ultimately I'm seizing his property. And therefore, both said the same way that by the two Yosef ben Shimon, the creditor, could go ahead and seize from jointly owned property, so too by Pidyon HaBen, if the two sons still did not divide up the property, therefore own it jointly, the coin could come, seize five slime worth of property, and tell the boys, you guys figure it out. Masha Inkain, once they divide up the estate, each of the sons could deflect the claim of the coin onto the other. Do Amar Rava, because Rava says as follows. Excuse me, Amar Rava, Michti, Nechasi Debar Inish Inin Arvoin Bey. So Rava says, a person's property is his guarantor. Right? Is his guarantor. Mi'i gamidi delididei lo matzi tavele ula arev matza tavele. So we'll say, so Rava comes along and he says, Rabbi, I don't understand your logic. You're saying that ultimately, again, what happens over here is that when the two sons did not yet divide up, remember again, this is where the father died, two sons did not yet divide up estate property, Cohen could come to the jointly owned land and seize five slaim. Rava says, I don't understand the logic there. At the end of the day, a person's property is his guarantor. That's how property works, right? Property is your guarantor. So the Gemara says, "Mi ikamidi dilididei lo matzi tavele ulari matzavere." People say, "How does a guarantor work?" You know, you can't bypass the credit, the debtor, and go to a guarantor, right? First, you have to go to the debtor. If you can't collect from the debtor, then ultimately you go to the guarantor. What's happening in this case, effectively, I will say? You're bypassing the sons, going back and going right to the guarantor, right to the land. So how could that be? Remember again, if you come to the sons, what are the sons going to tell the Kohen? What are they going to tell the Kohen? Not me, right? I'm not the Bechar. So could it be that there's a situation where you could bypass the debtors and ultimately go right to the creditor, to the land? V'atanan, we learned, Hamalva es chavero al yedei arev. If a person lent his friend money through a guarantor, lo yifra min ha'arev. You cannot go ahead and proactively collect from the guarantor. The kaimalon, what does that mean? You can't collect from the guarantor. Delo yitva min ha'arev tchila. You can't first go after the arev. You have to first go after the debtor. And then only if the debtor can't pay, only then do we go after the guarantor. So Rosh says, therefore again, in this case over here, how can you say, we'll simply bypass the two boys and collect from the jointly owned land? That's going and collecting from the guarantor in it where you can't collect from the debtor. Ela amarav li olam shemes li achal amayom. So we'll say, let's go back for just a moment to revisit the case. What's the situation where the father died after 30 days? After 30 days, which we'll say means that the obligation of pidyon had already devolved upon the father. So we'll say, if there's a lot of property, if there's a lot of property, the Kohen could go ahead and seize the property. Look at Rashi. Hachanami de Shakil. Rashi says, Afilu chalko, deha ishtabdu nechasim b'chaye ha'av. So let's listen to this. Shemir will hold like this. If the father dies after 30 days, the obligation for pinyon devolves upon the estate. If the obligation for pinyon devolves upon the estate, then the Kohen could come and collect the five slum just like any other creditor. Okay? But rather, what's the situation that we're dealing with over here? Well, this is very interesting. The case we are dealing with where is, in fact, where there is only five slaim in the estate. That's the estate. Five slaim. Udukuli amos was saying, now watch this. All the father left behind was an estate of five slaim. Udukuli amma islahud ravasi. And everyone subscribes to the position of ravasi. What did ravasi say? Dem ravasi. Ha'achid shechok was actually quite fascinating. Ravasi said, when brothers divide up an estate, mechtze yershim u mechtze lekuchos, they are viewed for half of the Yerusha like inheritors and half of the Yerusha like purchasers. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at the last Rashi on the daf. Mechtze yershim u mechtze lekuchos, Rashi says, demisveikale I bereira vi yershin ninhu, o in bereira u lekuchos ninhu, hilchach mechtze yershim etz kuchos. We'll say, this is actually amazing. There is a fundamental machlokus when it comes to Yerusha, what the mechanism of Yerusha is. Father dies, leaves behind an estate. How do we view ultimately again the disbursement of Yerusha? Is it that ultimately again they're Yarshim, they're inheritors? And I will say, now if you say inheritors, that means that we employ the concept of Brera. Brera means retroactive clarification. That we assume that, because we also remember again, the way it works on a technical level is that when the father dies, each of the children owns some chelik in every piece of the property. It's not the pshat that this son owns this, this son owns this, this son owns this. They all own everything jointly. So when you divide up the estate, how do you view that division? Do you view them as yarshim, as inheritors? When we say yesh breira, there's retroactive clarification, and therefore it turns out that whatever portion each son gets, that's the portion that the father meant for him to have. Or are they viewed as lekuchos, as purchasers, that they essentially purchased their respective portions from one another? Ravasi says that the truth is we're unsure, and therefore we treat them like both. Regarding half of the Yerusha, they are considered to be like Yershim, and regarding half of the Yerusha, they are considered to be like Lekuchos. Now watch this, Rabosei. So that's piece number one. Everybody agrees that milva haksuva batora amadeis, that if ultimately again you have a debt that is recorded in the Torah, what's an example of a debt that's recorded in the Torah, like pidyon haben, lav kiksuva b'shtar damyo, is as if it is. It's not as if it is recorded in a document. It is an unsecured debt. It's a verbal agreement. Udukuli alma islahu d'rav papa, and everyone subscribes to the concept of rav papa. The amar rav papa. Milva alpe gove min hayershin ve'ino gove min alakuchos. And Rav Papa holds that aloch lamaisa, a debt that is not recorded in a document, but rather is only made verbally, you can go ahead and collect that debt from inheritors, but you cannot collect it from purchasers. V'hacha b'chamish v'lo b'chatzi chamish k'miflagi. And I will say furthermore, so I will say there's a multi-tiered piece over here. So furthermore again, there's another discussion, which is, if a Kohen, let's say a Kohen cannot collect the full five slum, so we'll say, do we say pidyon haben is an all or nothing proposition? Do we say that ultimately, again, if there's five slum, that's what you're entitled to? Less than five slum, you're not entitled to anything. Derbi Meir Savar, so we'll say, so therefore, if you put this all together, here's what happens. So we'll say, so therefore, the case over here is where the father died after 30 days. After 30 days. Right? And therefore, again, the obligation of pidyon devolves upon the estate. That's piece number one. Piece number two. There's only five slaim left in the estate. Piece number three. We pass in like Ravasi, who says that when brothers divide up an estate, they are viewed half as lukuchos, half as yarshim. Number three, or maybe it's number four already, right? Milvak suba Torah, when you have a debt recorded in the Torah, that is like a verbal debt, not like a written debt. Furthermore, right, ultimately again, verbal debts can only be collected from lukuchos, from yarshim, and not from lukuchos. There, Rabbi, it turns out that what? Each brother inherits 2.5 slaim. For those 2.5 slaim, on 1.25 slaim, each brother is considered to be like a yoresh, and each brother is considered to be like a lokeach. So therefore again, when the coin shows up, the greatest claim he has against each of the brothers is what? 1.25 slaim. Because again, it is an unsecured debt that can only be collected ultimately from Yerushim and not from the Kuchos. So the greatest amount of collection possibility he has is 1.25 slaim. And then Abba said the further fundamental shaila becomes, when a Kohen cannot collect the full 5 slaim, is there a din of Binyan HaBen or not? So Abba said, therefore again the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir Savar, Chamish v'lo chatzi chamish. Rabbi Meir says, no. Either you get the full 5 or you get nothing. Rabbi Yehuda savar chamish afilu chatzi chamish. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no. 5 is the ideal, but even if you can't get 5, you collect what you can get. Ihachi, if that's the case. Rabbi Yehuda omer nischaivu nechasim. When Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah that the estate became obligated, it's not the estate, but rather nischaiv gavra miboyle. You should say ultimately again that the father became obligated, the gavra became obligated. Va'od, furthermore, va'od tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer ha'achen shachalku. Right, when brothers divide up an estate, im yesh asara zuz lazeh va'asara zuz lazeh chayovin. Ultimately, again, if there's 10 zuz for each of them, then they will be chayiv. Pinyon aben ve'im lav pturin. But if not, the lipatra ma'asara zuz lazeh ve'asara zuz lazeh. So what does it mean? There's 10 for each. Ilema bein dirusha bein delekuchos. So ultimately, again, if you want to say that there's that means both for you, meaning both for their yorshin identity and their lekuchos identity, the chamesh shafilu chatzi chamesh, and we allow a coin to collect up to 5, but even less than 5, ihaki my iria asara. Then why do you have to make it as a case of where he's inheriting 10 slaim? Afilu b'tzir me'asara, even less than 10 slaim would be fine. Because we'll say that we pass that the coin could collect whatever is collectible. Ela pshita asara zuz d'Yerusha lazeh, v'asara zuz d'Yerusha lazeh. Rather, what are we saying? That ultimately, again, each brother inherits a total of 10 zuz. And we'll say, therefore, what on those 10 zuz, for 5 of the zuz, they are considered to be like what? Like a yoresh, and for 5, a lokeach, alma, chamesh v'lo chatzi chamesh. Therefore, we'll say, what do you see? You see that halacha lamaisa, they're holding that when the kohen collects the pinyon, he's only entitled to collect the full amount of the pinyon, not a partial part of the pinyon. Chamech shalom, chamech sevir alei. Elo, rather says the Gemara, the kuli alma, chamech shalom, chatzi chamech. Everyone agrees with us that by a pinyon aben, the din of pinyon aben is 5 slaim. That's the din. That's the din, 5 slaim. Chamech shalom, chatzi chamech. So what's the discussion over here? Bidrav Asi, Virav Papa Kamiflagi. So we'll say, interestingly enough, the conclusion the Gemara is coming to over here is that there's no Chamesh the Chatzi Chamesh. Pidyon HaBen is a 5 Slaim obligation. If for some reason the child, or for that matter the father, doesn't have 5 Slaim, there is no Pidyon HaBen transaction. So what is at the root of the machlokus of Rav Bosai? So the Gemara suggests it's the statement of Rav Asi and Rav Papa. So we'll say, remember again, so Rav Asi and Rav Papa, what do they both say? Rav Asi's statement is that when children inherit, they are viewed as lukuchos, purchasers, on 50% of the inheritance, and inheritors on 50% of the inheritance. Rav Bosai, what's the nafkamina between being a purchaser and an inheritor? It's very simple. If the father died and he left unsecured debt, he borrowed money from people, but what? It was never recorded in a document. There was a milva al peh. Milva al peh, right? Verbal agreements can be collected from yarshim, cannot be collected from lekuchos. So both say that's the machlokas. So the machlokas is Rav Asi's statement and Rav Papa, that ultimately, and Rav Papa's, that for a milva al peh, for a unsecured loan or unsecured debt, you could collect from Yarshim and not from Lekuchos. So we'll say, good. V'ikad demas nila seifa. Others take this entire discussion and put it on the seifa, the end of the Mishnah. Nischaivu anachasim, that ultimately, again, nischaivu anachasim, demis ha'av ema. So we'll say, when the Mishnah says that the estate has become obligated in pidyon because the father died, when did the father die? Emas. Ilema de Mislachar Shloshim, if you want to say the father died after 30 days, Michlad Rabbi Meir Savar Ki Chalku Pturin. That makes it sound like Rabbi Meir holds, that's what? When divided up the estate, they're parted from Bet Yonah Ben. But how could that be? Ha Ishtabdi Luhu Nechasi. Ultimately what? The estate becomes encumbered, it becomes obligated to the Kohen. Ella Besoch Shloshim. But rather, again, it must be that the father died within 30 days. If that's the case, ki cholku amai mechayiv. First white line, mem chesim days. When they divide up the estate, right, why should they be chayiv? Rabbi, so the Gemara, sorry, ki cholku amai mechayiv, Rabbi Huda. Leza legabe hay litche, the gabe hay litche. After all, the coin comes to each of the brothers, and one brother says, I'm not the Bukhar, go to my brother. Second brother says, I'm not the Bukhar, go to my brother. I'm Rabbi Yirmiyah. Zosomeres Shnei Yosef ben Shimon Shahayu bi'ir achos v'lakach echad mehem sada mechavero balchov kova mimenu. So what do you see from here? You see from here that when you lent money to Yosef ben Shimon, and there are two of them in a city, right? So we'll say the problem is you can't really collect from either of them because both will say, not me. But if they happen to own a field jointly, what you can do is what? Sees that jointly owned property and says, hey guys, one of you owes me money. You two go and work it out. So the Gemara says, Da'amrele ibididach masikna mansa didach kashakilna vibechavercha masikna mishtabda li mikame didach. Because he could say, the creditor could say, if Reuven and Shimon, right, if you owe me money, I'm taking yours. And if your friend owes me money, I'm taking from his. Amarava michti nichsoy debar inish inanan vaimbe. But again, Rava said, like we said before, I both say, but one second, a person's property is his creditor, is his guarantor, and you can only go to a guarantor after you go to the creditor. V'chula klishna kama. Then the discussion continues exactly as it was before. So we'll say this second version has the same exact conversation as before. It's just halacha lemaisa. Halacha Meis has it on the Seifa instead of the Reisha. So we'll say, so ultimately, again, the Gemara records this Machlokes, right? Ultimately, again, what we do, first of all, so a number of you solve the stick ideas. Number one, Adin Yerusha, how do we view Yarshim? Like Lekuchos or like Yarshim? So Rav Asi has the interesting idea that Halacha Meis, they're considered to be like both. Rav Papa teaching us that a Milva Alpeh, verbal agreements or verbal obligations could only be collected from Yarshim and ultimately, again, not collected from the Kuchos. And the conclusion that the Gemara seems to reach is that the din of Pidyon HaBen is only on the complete five Sloim, which means that if the Bechor, for that matter, the father, has less than five Sloim, the Kohen doesn't say, fine, I'll take what you have, and we'll call it even. No, Pidyon HaBen is five Sloim. If you don't have it, then ultimately, again, there's no Pidyon until you ultimately amass that amount. So I'll just say something interesting. Shulchan Aruch Paskin's over here. Meisa Av Kodem Shepadon. So let's say again, the father dies before redeeming his son. So the father dies before Pidyon HaBen. So listen to this. Bein meis toch lamed, bein meis la'achar lamed. Whether he died before the child turned 30 days or after the child 30 days. Va'banim kayamin. And ultimately again, the sons are still alive. Nostin bein shnehem heisloim. We make both children contribute together five sloim. Va'afilu chelkon kivar nechasim. So we'll say, that's halacha lemaisa. Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that in this kind of case where father died before redeeming the sons, right? And again, this is all the suffixes. We don't know who is the firstborn son. We obligate the sons together to give five sloim to the Kohen. Whether they did divide the estate, didn't divide the estate, is inconsequential. They give the five sloim together to the Kohen and affect Pidyon HaBen that way. Beautiful. Says the Mishnah. Shtei nashim. Shalom Bichru. So we'll say two women who never had children before. The Yoldu Shnei Sekharim, and they each give birth to a firstborn boy. So we'll say Yutzlam Lekohen. Ultimately, again, they go ahead and they pay 10 Sloim to the Kohen. So we'll say there's absolutely no Chiddush in this case. This is obvious. Two women give birth, they both give birth to a firstborn boy, they're both obligated to do Pidyon HaBen. We'll see what the Mishnah is, just we'll say, going through a list of cases, because we'll get to the more Chiddush cases, but there's no Chiddush in this case. Next, Meis Echad Mehen Besoch Shloshim Yom. So we'll say ultimately again, so in this case over here, what happened is the fathers prepaid the Pidyon. It's a prepaid pinyon option. Right, so you go ahead and there's no discount, but you prepay the pinyon. Right, so let's say the fathers gave the coin the pinyon money before the child turned 30 days. And then what happens? So Nebuch, one of the children died. Meis echa mehem b'so shloshim yom. Im l'koin echa nasan. So I'll say, so obviously, this case once again assumes that halacha l'maisa, the son, the children are getting mixed up. It's like Rashi, for example, points out over here, these two men who gave birth, let's say they gave birth in hiding. They gave birth in hiding. So the babies get mixed up. So in a regular case, this is going to sound strange, but it doesn't really matter that they got mixed up. Meaning for Pagan event purpose, it doesn't matter that they got mixed up. Why? Why? Because they're both Bechars. So it doesn't matter. Where does it matter? So they both got mixed up. The fathers, the two fathers, both prepaid the Kohanim. Now what happens? One of the children died before 30 days. Which means that technically speaking, right, one of the fathers is entitled to get his money back. So meis echa mehem b'so shloshim yom. Im koin echad nasan, if both fathers had both given the pinyon to what? To the same koin, then yachzir lo chamish slaim. Then in achinami, the koin would have to return five slaim, right? Because it was say, since it's the same koin who got both pinyons, one thing is clear, which is what? He's not entitled to one of the pinyons. We don't know which child. Okay, so just return back five slaim. The boss said, now remember, who does he return it to? To both of the fathers, and they work it out, right? So one pinyon to both of the fathers, and they work it out. So the Gemara says, because remember, again, we don't know. I'm sorry? Two mothers, one father. Correct. Two mothers, one father. Also, though, we're going to see, actually doesn't make a difference over here. Because remember, this is a case of two bechars. So with the idea of Yerubo, like, just to be clear, it's shtei nashim shelo bichru, it's one father, two mothers. Rabbi say, ultimately, again, the idea over here is when the son died, and one kohen, there is one pidyon which has to be refunded. Vim the shnei kohanim, and ultimately, again, if it's two kohanim, but if the fathers or father gave to two kohanim, so we'll say so two pinyons were given to two kohanim, ein yachal lahotzi miyadam. So we'll say once again, this is the reverse case, like we saw before. In this case, both of the kohanim could say what? I got the redemption for the living child. Other kohanim, I got the redemption for the living child. And there's, of course, no way to prove who is who. And therefore, you cannot extract the money from either of the kohanim. Zachar unikeva. Let's say the two women gave birth, one to a Zachar, one to a Nekeva. Again, remember, we don't know who gave birth to who. O shnei Zecharim u Nekeva. Or ultimately, again, there were two Zecharim and a Nekeva. So we'll say, in this case over here, of shnei Zecharim and Nekeva. So we'll say, remember again, Zachar and Nekeva. So ultimately, again, we know that one is a Bechar. Obviously, one of the mothers is a Petarechem. Ultimately, again, the other is not. Or shnei zecharim in a keva. And I will say now again, in the case of shnei zecharim as well, halacha lemaisa, the issue you have over here is what? Here are the scenarios. Either I have two bechars, right? Or ultimately, again, one bechar and one firstborn in a keva, and the second child that was born to one of the mothers is a zachar. So we'll say, so what happens in this case? So no sin chamesh sla'im lekoin. Ultimately, again, so in this case, Rabbi said there would only be an obligation to give one set of pinyon. Because let's remember again, in this case, there is only one definitive bechar, right? Remember again, Mashenkin in the first case, where you have two women both giving birth to two boys, there's two definitive bechar. The only suffix comes up at who died. In this case over here, there is only one definitive bechar. Therefore, again, there will only be an obligation to give five slum to the Kohen. Shtei nekevas v'zachar. Rabbi say, if ultimately, again, the women gave birth to two girls and a boy, right, between them. So we'll say, remember, again, in that case of two girls and a boy, then what? It's possible that halacha l'maisa, there's no bechar, right? O shnei zachar m'shtei nekevas, or two boys and two girls, which once again, possibility that there's no bechar. So the Gemara says, O shnei zachar m'shtei nekevas, in kam kohen klum. The Kohen has no claim for anything because it's possible that there's no bechar at all. Achas bichra v'achas shalo bichra. So we'll say, if let's say again, two women, one had given birth previously and one had not given birth previously. The yaldushne is karm, and between them they gave birth to two boys. So no sin chamish slam the Kohen. Ultimately, again, there is an obligation of pidyon. Why? Because one of them is a bechar. Meis echa mehem b'sof shloshim. If ultimately, again, one of the children died within 30 days, and we're not sure, was this the son of the woman who had given birth for the first time, or the son of the woman who had previously given birth? Ha'av pater, ultimately, again, the father will be potter from going ahead and paying pinyon. So the Gemara says, ha'av potter. I'm sorry. Ha'av potter. Me'sa'av ha'abanim kayamim. What happens if the father died, but the children are still alive? Rabbi Meir says, im nasnu achlo chilku nasnu. If ultimately, again, they paid before dividing the estate, then we allow the money to remain with the Kohen. V'im lav p'turin, but ultimately, again, if they divided up the estate already, then they will be p'tur. Rabbi Huda, this is about this is similar to the previous Mishnah. Rabbi Huda says, nischaivu nechasim, that the estate becomes obligated. Zacha unikeva ein lekoin klum. But ultimately, again, if they gave birth to a zacha and a keva, I will say the same case of where one woman had given birth before, one woman had never given birth, and between them they have a zacha and a keva. In that case, ein lekoin klum. Because it's possible that what? That there's no bechar at all. Shtei nashim shal shnei anashim shal bechar. So we'll say two women, and two husbands, right? Shal shnei anashim shal Shalo Bechru. So we'll say, so two women who had never given birth, married to two different men, V'yaldu Beis Zacharim. And between them they gave birth to two boys, Zenos and Lekoin Chamish Slaim, right? Zenos and Chamish Slaim Lekoin. We'll say, ultimately, again, both are obligated to Pinyon Aben, two Bechorim, Meis Echemen B'Soch Shloshim Yom. But I will say, if one of the sons died within 30 days, but what? We don't know which son. So I will say, im lekoin echa nasnu yachzir lahem chamish slaim. If they both gave to the same coin, the coin will be obligated to refund to both husbands, or 1/5 slaim, it'll give it to the husbands, so you guys work it out. Im l'shnei kohanim, but if each father paid to a different coin 5 slaim, then ultimately, again, ein yecholin lehotzi miyadam. Then there is no possibility to reclaim any of the money. Zachar u'nekeva, but if the two women gave birth to a zachar u'nekeva, ha'avos p'turin, ultimately, again, the fathers, and remember, the children got mixed up in all of these cases, the fathers are not obligated to give any kind of pinyon aben. Why? Because each father can claim what? Mine is the girl. So ultimately, v'aben chayiv liftos et atzmo. But Rabbi says, in this kind of case, when the son grows up or becomes of age, he is obligated to do pinyon aben for himself. Shtei nekevas v'zachar. Rabbi says, if between, remember again, two women married to two men, if between them they have two girls and one boy, o shtei nekevas v'shnei zacharim, or two girls and two boys, in kan lekoin klum. Then Rabbi says, there's no claim of the coin anything. Why? Because also there's no bechar at all. Achas bichra v'achas shelo bichra. I will say, but if two women married to two men, one of them had given birth before, one of them had never given birth. Shal shnei anashim, married to two men. V'yoldu shnei zecharim, and they gave birth to two boys. Ze shelo bichra ishto nosin chamish slaim. The woman who had never given birth before, her husband gives 5 slaim to the kohen. Zachar nekeva, and the other one obviously is not obligated to do so because his wife had already given birth. Zachar nekeva, but if between the two women they had a boy and a girl, we don't know who had what. In kama kohen klum. In that case, the coin is entitled to nothing because it's possible that what? That there was not a Bechar at all. Right? So we'll stop over here. We're going to Meretz Hashem explain all of these cases in the Mishnah tomorrow.